great to be here, and I'm excited for Gian to go ahead and begin in a minute here talking about social media accessibility. So I met Marcel at the AHEAD conference over the summer, and it was just really exciting to learn about these webinars and what ADA Conference Center has going on, the ADA. So my role at Accessibility Oz is that I do marketing and business development, and it's a really exciting time to be in web accessibility. I'd like to introduce you to Gian. Gian Wild. She's been doing web accessibility since 1998. She spent 6 years on the W3C Web Content Accessibility Guidelines Working Group, contributing to WCAG 2. So she can tell you a little bit more about that if you have questions at the end. But today she's going to be talking specifically about social media and accessibility. So Gian Wild, go ahead.
Thanks, Eliza. Thanks, Marcel. And thank you for having me. I hope everyone's okay with my Australian accent. One of the things that I am going to say is I'll probably reference mobile as mobile. So whenever I say mobile, what I mean is mobile. I hope everyone's well, and I'm really looking forward to today. Social media and accessibility is, of course, a really big deal at the moment. I'm actually speaking at a range of events about social media and accessibility over the next few months. So I've got, I think, 4 conferences in the US up until the end of November. So please have a look at our website or ask me questions afterwards. And if you happen to be in the area, please, or attending any of those conferences, please come up and introduce yourself to myself and hopefully Eliza. So starting today, I just wanted to introduce you to my team. As it was about a year ago, we've probably, I'd say, doubled in size since then. And one of the it's my company. I started it in 2011, so we're 4.5 years old. And I wanted to be able to mimic the percentage of people with disabilities in the general population in our own organisation. So it was actually a target of ours that at least 20% of our staff, had some kind of disability of some sort. So we proactively hire people with disabilities. But looking at our staff there, you wouldn't necessarily think that anyone has a disability, and that's what's really important to know when it comes to people with disabilities. It's often hidden in plain sight. So, for example, over the last 4.5 years, we've probably had about 30 staff, and we've had people with a whole range of different disabilities and using different assistive technologies. So we've had 3 people use speech-to-text programs. We've had 2 people use on-screen magnifiers. We've had 3 that are reliant only on the keyboard. We've had 5 screen reader users. And then we've actually got some people who have specific disabilities that don't rely on an assistive technology. So someone with epilepsy, I myself get migraines. And so epilepsy and migraines can be triggered by an inaccessible website, basically by flickering content. I've had migraines triggered 4 or 5 times in certain testing that I've conducted. And that kind of testing, of course, the person that has epilepsy, they don't do that testing at all, because what would trigger a migraine in me would trigger an epileptic fit in her. Then we've got someone with fibromyalgia, and that affects her work quite a lot, because she, she struggles to make it through a full day. So we've been cognizant of that, and she works half days most of the time. And we've had a few people with dyslexia. And interestingly, we've had a couple of people with dyslexia where they've had difficulty reading, but we've had someone with dyslexia who has no trouble reading whatsoever, but actually has trouble writing. And so they use a speech-to-text program to fill out forms and things like that. So if we just go back to that original slide, you look at the people there, and you wouldn't think that any of us had a disability. There's no guide dogs, there's no canes, there's no people in wheelchairs, and yet, at least 20%, I think we're at 35% at the moment, have disabilities. So it's important to remember it's not just about vision impairments. In the United States, there's about 38 million people with disabilities. In the world, it's about 1 billion people. And those 38 million unique users, remember that, of course, some people have multiple disabilities. But of the 38 million in order of magnitude, 20 million have physical impairments, 14 million have cognitive impairments, 11 million are deaf or hard of hearing, and 7 million are vision impaired. So, in fact, of the four groups that are affected by an inaccessible website, the smallest group is vision impairments, but that's often what people think when they come when they talk about web accessibility, and think it's just about vision, and that's definitely not the case. Very briefly, myself talked about this before, but we have a whole bunch of services, and basically we focus only on web accessibility. We don't do anything else. So anything that has to do with web accessibility, we do mostly audits. And building websites and things like that, and user testing with people with disabilities. We have four products, and if you're interested in these, then please feel free to ask questions at the end, or look at our website or contact us. But we have AusPlayer, which is our the world's first fully accessible video player that can play YouTube videos and things like that. AusArt, which is an automated accessibility testing tool that is actually fully accessible to accessibility testers, unlike a lot of the other automated accessibility testing tools out there. AusWiki, our database of accessibility errors and solutions. So we've got over, I think we're close to 1,000 errors, and they have examples and screenshots and code and solutions. So that's quite popular with developers. And we do talk a little bit about BrowserLab, which is an assistive technology. So I want to move into why social media is so important for people with disabilities. So this is taken from a report. There's basically 5 or 6 reasons why the reasons behind social media use. So there's the personal, which I'm sure you're all aware of, things like examples including creating an online commentary of personal thoughts, sharing photos and discussing social events. So think, you know, Facebook and that kind of stuff. And that's really important in terms of having a relationship with people, you know, outside of your circle. You know, social networking is very important in terms of people who are perhaps isolated because they're, you know, in a rural region, or they might have a physical disability, which means that actually, you know, travelling to certain events or things is difficult for them. So personal social networking is incredibly important. And then there's work. So things like creating a resume, creating professional connections is incredibly important, and discussing job opportunities. So, you know, I belong to a whole bunch of different accessibility groups on LinkedIn, and, you know, I follow, you know, the #A11Y tag on Twitter. And all the, you know, there's a heap of job opportunities that get emailed, that get messaged around through Twitter and on these LinkedIn groups. And of course, if you couldn't access that social media, then you'd be missing out on those opportunities. Entertainment is the third reason. So things like sharing videos, following discussion from celebrities, discussing strategies in online games. There's kind of this idea that people with disabilities behave differently from the general public, and that's not the case. There's a video, if you're interested, I'll send some information out afterwards, about a woman who comes home from work at the end of the day, and she gets on Second Life, which is an online gaming experience, a multiplayer game, and she's in a wheelchair. And she performed an experiment where she went into this club in Second Life, and she went as a quote, norm, unquote, which is a person without a disability. And, you know, she chatted to people and talked to people in Second Life and had a great time. And because in Second Life you can actually mimic the disability that you have in real life, she left the club and she came back in a wheelchair. And which was termed a quote, really, unquote. And most of the people that she was talking to before completely ignored her. So there is still a level of discrimination when it comes to people with disabilities, but it also is, you know...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you slow down just a little bit, because our captain is trying to keep up with you.
I apologize. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you, though.
You know, online gaming is certainly a big part of a lot of people's lives, so that's important as well. The remaining two reasons behind social media is provision of goods and services. So, you know, including sharing information about a product, responding to user feedback about a product, accessing government services. So, for example, I was on a flight and they offloaded the plane, and for some reason we couldn't get into the airport. About 100 metres away, there was an open door where someone, a group of people from another plane was actually going into the airport, and we stood there for an hour and a half while they disembarked and watched them, and then, you know, people got on the plane and we're like, why can't we just walk that 100 metres to get into the airport? And I actually tweeted to the owner of the airline, and I said, you know, this is ridiculous. And they responded immediately, and about 5 minutes later, someone came along and escorted us through that open door. So, you know, it can make a lot of difference having access to social media. And, you know, especially when you're in a particular situation. Okay, and then lastly, education, and this is incredibly important. So things like participation in online classes and sharing learning resources. But, you know, in accessibility, we're always learning. It's the kind of industry that is changing rapidly, and, you know, you really need to keep up with updates to things like screen readers, but you also need to, you know, learn new techniques such as HTML5 and ARIA. So you're just continually learning. And the way that I keep up with what I need to know is through Twitter and LinkedIn. And to try and find that information without those social networks would be incredibly difficult, because those social networks, they kind of filter the information that's out there. You know, the more relevant something is, the more interesting it is, then the more tweets it will get, the more likely it will, you know, will reach more people, that kind of stuff. And, of course, online courses, online classes, even if you're going to, you're physically attending a university, there's going to be some kind of online component to that education. And it's not necessarily going to be accessible. And I must say, you know, I find it quite heartening that there has been some accessibility cases in this area, because it is something that people need to really be aware of. And I must say, I went to university a very, very long time ago. But when I went to university, they were just putting stuff online. And we had a lecturer who thought he was a web whiz, so he decided that he was going to put his courses, his lectures online. And I, you know, was pretty busy. I was working at the time, and so I got to a couple of nights before the exam, and I thought, okay, I'm going to download all these lectures and read them. And he had put this flash page in front of it, which took about 4 minutes, and it was just a bunch of stars moving around in different directions. But the problem was, in order to download one lecture, you had to always go through that splash page. And we had very limited bandwidth back then. And so we actually, by the time I downloaded 3 lectures, I'd actually used up all the bandwidth that I was allowed for that week, and so I couldn't access the rest of the lectures. So not purely an accessibility issue, but, you know, something that wouldn't be accessible, such as Flash, certainly not back then. You know, there was no way to get around it or to skip that information. So, you know, it does affect everybody, not just people with disabilities. In terms of social networking by age group, social networking is, I'm just going to check the captioner. And I am going to slow down. Please keep telling me to slow down if I need to. In terms of social networking by age group, as you can see, social networking is increasing every single year, with the exception of 2014 for the 18 to 29 group, where they dipped a little bit. But basically, there are four groups of people here. So age 18 to 29, 90% of people aged 18 to 29 are using social networking. People aged 30 to 49, 75% of them are using social networking. And people aged 50 to 64, 50% are using social networking, which I found very interesting. But even more interesting is that people aged 65 and over, 30% of them use social networking. So that's a really, really large number. And it's something that, you know, everyone is getting involved in. And it's constantly increasing every year. It's increasing. Social media is really important, especially when it comes to employment. Employment is incredibly important for people with disabilities. I know in Australia that people with disabilities are often discriminated against in terms of, you know, being hired. When I started Accessibility Oz, it was incredibly important to me that the location that we worked from, our office, was fully accessible. And yet, for a small business, it was very, very difficult for us to find an accessible location. So there were always stairs, or there are always, you know, maybe you could get to the office fine, but you couldn't get to the kitchen, there wasn't enough room for a wheelchair, that kind of thing. So we're actually in the back half of a building which we physically modified so that it was fully accessible. And it was just because it was so difficult to find something, we had to build something ourselves. And so we have had people who work for us in wheelchairs that can get around. But, you know, if I had decided as a small business that I wasn't going to do something like that, then we would never have been able to hire those people in wheelchairs. And unemployment for people with disabilities is at 10.2%, so 1 in 10 people with disabilities are unemployed. And the figure is probably a lot higher. It's probably underreported. There's probably a number of people that would like to work but, you know, don't access unemployment services. It's really important also to note that the percentage of recruiters who use LinkedIn is 95%, and that's a huge number. So you can imagine if you're applying for a job and you're not represented in LinkedIn, the recruiter's going to think that that's a little bit strange. And the percentage of HR managers that have reconsidered hiring a candidate after looking at social media is 55%. So, you know, it's a huge number that look at social media and change or make their decisions based on social media. So there's really, there's a bunch of reasons why social media isn't accessible. There's, you know, I suppose we could talk for hours on, you know, the philosophy behind it, why these really big companies haven't put money into making their systems fully accessible, but really there's only one reason that you need to worry about, and that is the fact that it changes constantly. So this happened about 6 months ago on Facebook. I noticed that for probably a day, all my news feeds had HTML in them. So this is a picture of Facebook from crikey.com.au, which is kind of like an alternative media newspaper in Australia, online newspaper. And its little image says underneath, span class equals quo, end span, why sacrifice yourself, whistleblowers. Now, so the HTML has been is showing up in Facebook, whereas before, you know, a day before it didn't. And the reason why is it's not that all of a sudden all of those online newspapers decided to put HTML into their headings. It's that Facebook decided to display their headings differently. And all of a sudden the HTML showed up. Now, most of the online newspapers picked it up pretty quickly. And within a day, almost all of the HTML was gone. But with Crikey, it took them about a week and a half. And it's just got to do with the fact that, you know, they were posting things to Facebook and no one was actually checking how it was showing up, and eventually a week or so later they all realised that this code was coming through and they had to change their headings. So the one big reason why social media is not accessible is because it changes very, very frequently, and you are never going to know when it changes. So the thing is that it might be, you could do some testing, you could do some user testing with people with disabilities and determine that a social media site was fully accessible, which we're going to talk about later, about how they're not. But let's say, you know, one day you tested them and they were all fully accessible. The problem is you don't know if that's going to be the case tomorrow. And they don't advertise when they change things. They don't tell people what it is that they change. So you can't be confident that any changes that they make will be accessible changes. So I'm going to talk about Facebook and some of the accessibility issues with Facebook now. So Facebook, compared to the other social media sites, changes incredibly frequently. So that's one of the biggest issues with Facebook. It's also known as one of the more inaccessible social media networks. There have been some improvements. There used to be a CAPTCHA on sign-up. A CAPTCHA is where you fill out a form and then you get some squiggly text that you have to, you know, have to write down what the text says. Now they're completely inaccessible because they're specifically created to stop robots from filling out these forms. So you can't put what that squiggly text is in the alt attribute to be read out by screen reader users for people who are vision impaired. Often with a visual capture, sometimes the person provides an audio capture, which then says, you know, this is the text that you need to write in your field. You know, sometimes they don't work. Sometimes you can't actually activate them properly. There's a whole bunch of different reasons why they're sometimes not accessible. So captures are a really bad idea, and having the capture on a sign-up process is definitely problematic. In fact, our chief technical officer is vision impaired, and for a while we used Gmail for our mailing system, and he couldn't actually create user accounts because they had a CAPTCHA on sign-up. And he doesn't rely on a screen reader, he relies on an on-screen magnifier, and yet he still couldn't complete that CAPTCHA form correctly to create those user accounts. The other thing was that there were no headings in Facebook previously, so you just get a whole bunch of newsfeed stuff and you couldn't jump from news item to news item, which made it very difficult to, you know, find what it was that you would be looking for. The issues that are with Facebook now are things like not fully keyboard accessible. It has a very low contrast keyboard focus indicator. Now, those are both fairly serious, well, they're incredibly problematic issues. There are a lot of people that rely only on the keyboard. They can't use a mouse, they can't use a touch screen. If you can't access everything using just the keyboard, then, you know, that system's not fully accessible to you. But the other problem is the keyboard focus indicator. So the keyboard focus indicator is what tells you where your keyboard is currently located on the page. And so you can tell that by the fact that whatever item you've currently focused on is changes colour or outlines or something like that. We'll show an example in a moment, but the keyboard focus indicator on Facebook is very, very low. So it's really difficult to determine where it is that you are on the site, and therefore it's very difficult to use it with a keyboard. The order of columns are incorrect, and I'll explain that a little bit I'll explain that in the actual example. And then the other issue is that zooming breaks the site. There's a lot of people who, you know, have a moderate vision impairment, a mild or moderate vision impairment, and they actually zoom in on the content through things like Control Plus, which increases the text size, or they might have an on-screen magnifier. And it's really important that the site still functions when you zoom in on the content, and that doesn't happen on Facebook. It's not fully VoiceOver accessible. VoiceOver is the screen reader that is used on iOS devices, mobiles and tablets. And it's quite problematic with VoiceOver. And there's no ability to add ALS attributes to images. There's kind of a hack that you can try and implement, but there's no real way to add an ALS attribute to an image for screen reader users. So this is the first example of keyboard accessibility. This is an example of an image that I uploaded, and the keyboard, you can actually access some information on that image. Basically, the only thing you can do with the keyboard is access the close button. So you can close and therefore not upload that image, but that's all you can do with the keyboard. However, when you hover over the image, two other options show up. One is a tag this image, so you can tag people and things like that. And then there's the edit this image, and it's only through editing the image can you add a caption. And the caption is basically the hack to get around to adding alt attributes. So adding a caption is then only accessed through the mouse, not through the keyboard. This second example shows the keyboard focus, the little world icon. On the left is the world icon without keyboard focus, and on the right is the world icon with keyboard focus. So you can see that the change is incredibly subtle. The item on the left is kind of like a medium blue on a lighter medium blue background, and the item on the right with keyboard focus is a darker medium blue on a medium blue background. So it's almost impossible to see the difference. This here is the keyboard focus indicator on a actual text navigation item. And once again, you can see that the background is just a slighter blue than the rest of the items. And this doesn't meet colour contrast requirements. So this would definitely not be accessible to a whole bunch of different users. This is the order of columns. Now, the order of content on Facebook moves across the top of the page first. So it goes through the search bar, the profile information, home, find friends, notifications, those kind of things. And then it reads down the left-hand column, which is all your apps and friends and interests and things like that. But then it doesn't move to the centre column. It jumps to the right-hand column, which has, you know, your people that you may know and the chat and things like that. And only after you've gone through that right-hand column does it jump to the middle column, which is where you can add a status update, photos, videos, create a photo album. And then it goes to the middle section in the centre, which is about adding friends. And unfortunately what happens is when you tab through these options, they infinitely add content, if that makes sense. So each time you tab past a friend, it adds another friend. And then you tab past that friend, and then it adds another friend. And then you tab past that friend, and then it adds another friend. And it keeps going, and there's no way to actually skip past that content. So this is basically a keyboard trap in Facebook. And I didn't investigate it enough to determine if there was some kind of way to skip past it, so I didn't want to highlight that too much. But it is definitely a problem. And the thing is that I might not have been able to find a way to get through that particular feature. And even if there was a way, I work in accessibility, all day, every day, and if I can't figure out an easy way to get past that, then, the general user isn't going to be able to. So that's one reason why I didn't look into it further. But so why is this important? So there's a couple of reasons. So firstly, this is the way that the keyboard will access the page. So the keyboard will actually go from the top to the left-hand column, through the right-hand column, and then through the middle. The other thing that will happen is this is how a screen reader will access the page. Now, For people who use screen readers because they're vision impaired, that's not such a problem because they have no idea what the page actually looks like. But there are actually people that use screen readers and see the visual page as well, and those people who often have cognitive impairments have difficulty reading content. So what they do is they read, they use a screen reader to read aloud the content on the page just to reinforce what's on the page as they're looking at it. So you can imagine going from the top to the left-hand column, then jumping to the right-hand column, and then moving into the middle would be incredibly complicated and confusing for those users. So this is when you zoom in on the site, so control plus, and there is a requirement under the accessibility guidelines, WCAG 2, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, that you be able to zoom to 200%. So at 200%, if you open up the little world icon, it has a little option that says who can see my stuff, who can see my future posts, and some other things. And then there's a pop-up on the left-hand side that is white text on a black background that's pointing to a particular option. And all you can see is that pop-up is new privacy shortcuts, visit your, and then it's the next line, OG to review photos, your tags, and then it's the next line, ins, your hidden from your, and that's it. So you can't actually read that pop-up at all because, you know, when the content is zoomed in. And that might be very valuable information. This is another example of a problem with the zooming. When you hover over an item, you get what's called a tooltip, which tells you, you know, especially if it's an icon or an image, it tells you what that actually means. So this is a little squiggly arrow icon with a circle around it. And the tooltip says, well, you can't really see what it says because you only see the bottom half of the text. The top half of the text is actually overlapped by the top navigation, the blue top navigation. So it says top trends, and I know that because I've used Facebook quite a lot, but the top half of the text is completely cut off and wouldn't be able to be read by anyone. Another example with Zoom is with the chat. So when you open the chat on the left-hand side, you open it normally, you can search for people, you can add text and things like that. At the top of the chat, which is a pop-up, you see the text chat and you have a little settings icon which allows you to change certain chat settings. When you zoom in, which is the right-hand image, that top section that has the chat and the settings is also underlapped by that top navigation. So, you know, someone that was using the site at that level wouldn't ever be able to change their settings. And this is VoiceOver. So you've got a suggested post, so basically an advertisement, and this is VoiceOver on a mobile, on an iPhone. And they've got a little drop-down arrow on the right-hand side, and that drop-down arrow allows you to actually add that post to your news feed. That drop-down arrow can never be accessed by VoiceOver. So, I mean, their ads are probably not that important, but, you know, that's certainly a requirement that people would want to be able to do. On the right-hand side, we call this a swipe trap. And I'm actually, I've got a mobile and accessibility article being published right now, actually, well, half an hour ago, on SitePoint. So if you're interested in mobile and accessibility, have a look at that, and maybe we can send out the URL. But the swipe trap is what I'm going to talk about in my next mobile accessibility article, and this is basically. Swipe is one of the ways that you navigate using VoiceOver, and so you can swipe to get to your friends' details, to get to basically the right-hand content in Facebook, but you can't swipe to go back to the newsfeed. So you're basically trapped in that our friends thing, and the only way to escape that is to actually close Facebook and start again, which is why we call it a site trap, because we're naming it after the keyboard trap, which is where you get trapped in a particular feature, and the only way to escape from that feature is to close the browser and start again. The other thing that Facebook has is this thing called infinite scrolling. I mentioned that a little bit with the add friends. That's with Facebook, when you get to the bottom of your newsfeed, it automatically adds more posts, and then you get to the bottom of those posts and it automatically adds more posts, and then you get to the bottom of that post, those posts, and it automatically adds more posts. And there's no way to stop that. There's no way to say, hey, that's it, I've had enough. And this is problematic for a number of reasons. Firstly, screen reader users, they can pull out the list of links or the list of headings in a page, and that obviously won't pull out any of the posts that are added through this infinite scrolling method. So they won't get an idea, a proper idea of what's actually on the page. It's also a problem because at the bottom of Facebook you have five icons. You've got newsfeed, requests, messenger, notifications, and more. And these icons, they provide very important functionality for Facebook. And so you can't actually get to those icons in your newsfeed because every time you try and move to the bottom of the page, it adds more posts. Now, there is a way to get to that content, and that's if you actually open a particular post, because if you open a particular post, then you will have a discrete ending, and then you can go to those options there. But it's a little bit of a workaround, and as I mentioned, it's something that I know, and most accessibility specialists know, but would a user necessarily know that that was how they got to that information? Or would a screen reader user even know that that information was there for them to access? I'm just moving on to slide 33 now, and this is the alt attributes issue. So when you go into the Facebook accessibility section, they say, yes, definitely you can add alt attributes, but what they actually mean is that you can add a caption. And so a caption is something that appears on top of your image, and it does get read to screen readers, but it's actually visible to all users. So if you have a look at this example here, it's a picture of our brochure, and it says, we focus on accessibility, so you don't have to. There's some quotes that you can't really read the content of, and then it's got the link, it's got our logo for our products, OzArt, OzWiki, and OzPlayer. And if I was to write an alt attribute for that, I would say, because it's got a beautiful image about it with a bunch of pencils, I'd say a picture of a bunch of pencils, we focus on accessibility so you don't have to, products include OzArt, OzWiki, and OzPlayer. But why would you do that to an image when everybody's going to see that content? The whole point of an alt attribute is that it's the equivalent content to what's being presented by the image. So you don't actually want to repeat that content that is actually in the image itself. So that's a real problem. Moving on to slide 34, I'm going to talk about YouTube. Slide 35, the biggest problem with YouTube is that all videos autoplay. Now, autoplay is it means basically they play as soon as you load the page. This can be a really serious problem because there's, if someone's using a screen reader, then the audio of the video is going to overlap the audio of the screen reader. There have been some accessibility improvements. So basically the embedded YouTube player that you can embed on your site and the YouTube player on the YouTube site are almost fully keyboard accessible, but not completely. They're not, both of them are not fully accessible either, but keyboard accessibility isn't 100% either. Slide 36. So major YouTube accessibility issues is that there is actually a keyboard trap, and there's it's not fully keyboard accessible. The order of items is incorrect. Uploading a video is not accessible. Zooming breaks the site. It's not fully voiceover accessible, and the auto captioning is problematic. So this here is a screenshot of the YouTube page. The first, the biggest, one of the biggest problems is that keyboard focus doesn't actually start at the beginning of the page. It starts in the search bar, and so the first item to receive focus is that search bar. And then if the user tabs, they actually tab backwards to the YouTube menu and the YouTube icon. So that could be incredibly confusing to people. The third item that receives keyboard focus is the upload notifications and the profile image. And then after that, you tab into what is an ad for Colorado, a Holden Commodore or something like that. And that ad is actually a keyboard trap. So you can't close it, you can't escape from it. You just, the only option you have is to close the browser and start again and not go back to YouTube. Slide 38. This is a video that, and as I'm sure you're aware, YouTube has these ads that pop up, which are quite annoying. But, you know, the whole point of the ads is that you can close them, you know, after a certain period of time. Now, you probably can't see it, but the little close icon on that ad does actually have keyboard focus. You can tell because it's got a little bit of a blue background. So it has keyboard focus, but you can't actually activate the close button in any way. So you can't press enter, you can't press space, you can't do anything to actually close that ad using just the keyboard. Another serious problem is when you actually get to slide 39, when you actually get to a video page. Once again, once you load a video page, you get forced to a particular section in the page, which is after the video. So the keyboard focus begins at the heading Honest Trailers Aladdin, which is the video in this example, but that's after the actual video itself. So now remembering that the content autoplays, so the video, as soon as you go to a video page, will start playing. And if you're using a keyboard, if you wanted to stop that video from playing, you would actually have to backwards tab, so shift tab, which moves the tab focus backwards over 10 times in order to access the pause option. And I spent probably half a day testing YouTube, and it was only towards the end of that half a day of testing did I determine that that was what had actually happened. Prior to that, I actually thought that there was no way to pause that video. So that's going to be a real problem for screen reader users. Now, because you know they don't know where they are on the page. They don't know that their focus is after the video, so they won't know to go backwards to pause that video. Now, as I said, there might be some kind of way for, you know, people to automatically pause that video, combination of keyboard shortcuts or things like that, but I don't know what it is, and this is what I do for a living. I did quite specifically not search for YouTube accessibility features because I wanted to see if there was something obvious in the YouTube site itself that would say, oh, by the way, here are your keyboard shortcuts. I didn't want to Google for that because that's not what general users are going to do. People with disabilities often don't identify necessarily as having a disability. They don't necessarily even know that these things exist to know to search for them. So I didn't, you know, I wanted to be kind of a user and, you know, try and figure it out my own way, and yeah, that's what I found. Slide 40. Now this is a really problematic issue. I don't know why they have this error, but in order to upload a video, you have to activate this really big arrow button. It's coded as a button, However, it's coded as an HTML5 button, and it doesn't have an alternative. So a screen reader is not going to actually read any content with that button. There's just not going to be any way for a screen reader user to upload video. Slide 41. So this is about zooming. At 100%, you can see in the top right-hand corner, there's an upload button, and there's a notifications button as well as the profile. But when you zoom into at 200%, that upload and that notification, those buttons disappear completely. So at 200%, you can't actually upload videos to YouTube. Slide 42. Now this was an interesting error. So this is when you're zoomed in. At the bottom of the page, you can select options like the language that you want, the country, restricted mode, etc. So if you select language English in order to change the language, your focus is moved to the very right of the page. So you select the language option, and then all of a sudden, all you can really see is Australia restricted mode off history. And the different languages, etc., that have been activated by selecting that option are actually to the left of the page and much further down the page. So, you know, once again, you can imagine if you are, you know, zooming in, you wouldn't know where you were, you wouldn't know what had happened. Slide 43. This is probably my favourite error. So screen readers aren't all that great at reading capitalised text. So sometimes they read it letter by letter, sometimes they just misread the word entirely. So this is the Facebook mobile app, and using VoiceOver, there's under the home option, there is the text, best of YouTube, all in capital letters. And it's actually read by VoiceOver as the best of YouTube. So yeah, problematic. Slide 44. So we have a swipe trap in VoiceOver as well. So when you go to the YouTube mobile app, when you first open the app, the search feature is highlighted and all the content underneath is kind of blacked out. And that's because the search feature has, I suppose, focus. And so if you type something in and you hit search, then you can go to a particular video and watch it. But if you wanted to exit that search feature and just go to, you know, your profile page or just see what's on the homepage of YouTube or something like that, you can't actually exit that search feature using VoiceOver. You can focus on the page underneath, the part that's blacked out, using VoiceOver, but only by tapping on the mobile screen, and so, you know, you can imagine someone who's vision impaired would just have to hope that they'd tapped on the right section of the screen and they hadn't activated, you know, the keyboard or anything like that. But if they do manage to tap onto that black area, that greyed out area, then VoiceOver will start reading that content. However, the search still remains highlighted at the top. And if you use the feature to go back to the top of the page, then you actually get sent straight back to that search feature. You can't go back to the top of the page, so there's no way to close it. And captioning, I don't know, maybe this is my favourite YouTube error, but the automatic captioning is just, it's really, really bad. We've done a whole lot of testing for different Australian government websites, and we've come across two different Prime Ministers and one Premier where they had videos on their sites. Someone had used the automatic captioning feature and the captions actually had that Prime Minister, which is like your President, or that Premier, which is, I guess, a bit like your Mayor's, actually had those people swearing in the captions. So when we found those errors, we called them up and told them, and they took those videos down and captioned them appropriately. So this is from a fantastic video called The Fake Jamaican Vacation. If you can access YouTube. I suggest that you go look it up. It is very, very funny. But basically, it's about a couple of actors that act out a skit, and then they upload it to YouTube. They turn on the automatic captioning. They download those captions, and they act out those captions. Then they upload it to YouTube again, and then they automatically caption it. They download those captions and act it out again. So if the captions were accurate, then they'd basically be acting out the same skit three times. In fact, of course, that's not the case. And in this example, the guy is saying, "Ah, oh, man, just hold the phone up in the air and let me hear the ocean." And the captions say, "Ah, red, just hold the phone up in the end of the Indians." Now, not accessible, not accurate. The other thing about the captions is, and they just implemented this in the last few months, maybe last year, they have this kind of blurring over the text on the captions, so it's very difficult to read. It's kind of a grey with kind of like a grey blur in the text. I'm not quite sure why they decided to do that, and I don't know whether it can actually be changed by the user. 5:46, and I'm going to talk about Twitter. Twitter is actually mostly accessible. There have been some accessibility improvements. It's now fully keyboard accessible. For a while there, you couldn't favourite a tweet or retweet with just the keyboard. And they have also removed the capture on sign-up, so kudos to them. It is not fully voiceover accessible, but the issues are minor. When you are on a Find People tab, you can search by tailored or popular. And it's basically an on-off switch. So you select tailored, popular is off. You select popular, tailored is off. You can't access those links with the voiceover. And when you're actually in the main page, the little bird icon at the top and the new tweets option at the top aren't accessed with voice, can't be accessed with voiceover and don't actually get read by voiceover. So those are the reasons why social media networks are currently not accessible. And if you do manage to come to any of my presentations on social media accessibility in the future, I'll have done all this testing all over again because, of course, the social media networks change all the time. But I'm going to talk now a little bit about how you actually address this issue, how you actually make your social media accessible. Step one, contact details. So you need to make sure your contact information is on your social media account page. So you should list a primary phone number and an email address where a user can reach your agency with questions, and provide, where you can, a link to your agency website that lists the appropriate contact information. Now, I would recommend that you make sure that that contact information is an actual person, not a generic email address, but it depends, of course, how large your organisation is. Step two, repeat content. So make sure your social media is available through your website. So every time you post something to Twitter or to Facebook or to YouTube, make sure it's actually hosted on your website somewhere as well. You can do that by implementing some kind of widget on your website that, you know, when you post to Twitter, automatically feeds updates your website, or it just needs to be part of the process. We do see a lot of videos that are on a YouTube channel that aren't on the main website. And it's important also that if you, say, are talking about, say, a competition or an event that's happening soon, it's not enough for that just to be on the events section of your site or, you know, a page 30 options down. You should kind of highlight that content as well. So make it a news item or put it on your slideshow on your homepage or something like that. Provide options for daily digest so that, you know, if people can't use these systems, you know, you can email out the updates at the end of the day or at the end of the week, or at the end of the month, depending on how often you make changes. Provide easy points of entry for more information. So when you're in, when you're posting to things like Twitter and Facebook, don't just link to your homepage, but link to the actual section that's relevant. But also, once again, make sure that anything that's really important or relevant or time sensitive is kind of easily accessed from your homepage or your newspaper, your news feed. And of course, post your social media to multiple outlets, and post the same thing to multiple outlets, because you know some systems are more accessible than others. Step three, provide alternative apps, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but we're running out of time. Provide contact details to, you know, any social media support or accessibility teams within your organisation. Provide links to the social media accessibility tips and support. Don't assume just because you can Google them and find Facebook accessibility that your users know how to do that too. And provide links to alternative apps and websites that create an accessible interface for that social media. Clear and simple language, step four. So use camel case. So that means where you're running two words together for a hashtag or something like that, capitalise the first letter of each word. So if you're going to hashtag audio webinars, then you'd capitalise the A on audio and the W on webinars. Avoid abbreviations where possible. Do limit hashtags and add them to the end of your tweet. Avoid misspellings. That can be very confusing for some users. And where you link to others' content on YouTube, warn users of autoplay, the lack of transcripts or captions or audio descriptions if they don't have them. And if you know where they can find that information, make sure you link to that too. And consider testing your social media with your users. And consider, especially if you're a large organisation, consider actually contacting those social media networks and saying, hey, you know, we really want to be able to use your network, but we're not confident that it's fully accessible. This is the experience that we've had. Can you tell us what you're going to do about that? And some of those steps were adapted from digital.gov. So specific tips for making Facebook accessible. Moving on to slide 56. Firstly, add captions to images, which I talked about a little bit earlier. Link to transcripts for videos. And when it comes to videos, you should load the videos in YouTube, add captions there, and then link to them in Facebook, because there's no real way to add captions using Facebook. Slide 57. There are alternative methods to the desktop interface. There is a product called a mobile web app called Facely HD, which is fairly close to accessible, and m.facebook.com. So the actual mobile website, not the mobile app, is considered more accessible than the Facebook mobile app. YouTube, specific tips to make YouTube accessible. Moving on to slide 59, you need to, if you're going to link to YouTube, you need to warn users of the autoplay. You should also make sure that there is a transcript, captions and audio description for all videos. And recommend alternative methods to the desktop interface. So there is this thing called the Accessible Interface to YouTube, Accessible YouTube and the iCant. And basically what that does is you can go to those pages, you put in the YouTube URL and it will play the YouTube video in one of those accessible desktop interfaces. Alternatively, the things that you can consider is actually host the videos on your own website, and then make sure, of course, you're hosting them in an accessible video player. So the two accessible video players that are out there at the moment are AusPlayer, which is our video player, and the PayPal accessible HTML5 video player. Now, I am doing some of the speaking engagements are on video and accessibility, so if you'd like any more information about that, please let us know. Twitter, specific tips to making Twitter accessible, slide 63. You should describe photos and videos or provide a link to the description. So whenever I post something with an image, I usually say alt follow, and the second tweet is an alternative text for that image. And consider proofreading the tweets with PIC, audio or video in square brackets. Now, that's a recommendation from digital.gov, but I've actually never seen it implemented. And, you know, I follow the accessibility Twitter stream as much as possible, and I've never seen it implemented. So I don't think it's really something that people are doing at the moment. And recommend alternative methods to the desktop interface. So there's a product called EasyChirp, and there's a Twitterific mobile app, which is really good. It allows users to change the colour contrast to something that suits them better. It does allows a lot of increasing text size and things like that. It's very good. And that's all from me. Thank you for your time. I just wanted to say very quickly before we move on to questions that we actually have a special for you guys to thank you for listening for the last hour. We've got a thing called an accessibility health check, which looks at the most serious. We've had two issues in the site. It's a 10 to 15 page report consisting of descriptions of accessibility compliance of your template, your general content, the text in your body, and technical content like slideshows and videos and things like that. We have an impact statement, a paragraph on the impact that these accessibility errors will have on people with disabilities. And the other thing we're offering is a full accessibility audit of your entire website, which is often a 100 to 150 page report consisting of accessibility errors, examples in your site and solutions, and it also has an impact statement. The accessibility health check is normally $6,000 and we're offering it to you guys for $3,000. The accessibility audit is normally $10,000 and we're offering it for $6,000. It's available until the 30th of November. You can pay upfront by invoice or credit card. If you are interested, please feel free to email us at inquiries@accessibilityoz.com. So enquiries at accessibilityoz, so accessibilityoz.com, and quote the ADA audio conference special. So thank you very much for your time, and I'm here for questions.
Wanda, will you please come on and give the telephone listeners directions on how to submit their questions?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. That's star one if you have a question.
We are going to start with a question that was put into the chat room. They are wondering, with the 10.2% that you quoted as unemployment, that they seemed to think that percentage was low, and they wanted to know where you got the number from.
I got that from Eliza. Eliza, do you know where that number came from? Oh, I'm guessing Eliza doesn't know where that number came from. I'll find out.
I'll find it in a moment here.
Yeah, okay, we'll get back to you on that. Yes, but I agree. I do think it was very low. Maybe we can move on to the next question.
Have Facebook and YouTube been notified about the issues that you talked about today about inaccessibility, and are they working on trying to resolve them?
I haven't had any contact with Facebook. Well, I've had some contact with YouTube just because I know the Google accessibility people there, but they don't take much stock in accessibility companies telling them that they are inaccessible, because it sounds a little bit like, we're trying to spruik for work. This presentation will be available on the Accessibility Oz conferences page, and I'll be writing an article about it and publishing it probably in the next month or two. So certainly, if they want to talk to us, they're more than welcome to. But no, we haven't contacted them.
Tawanda, are there any questions from our telephone participants?
There are no questions in the queue.
Okay. I will continue with the chat room questions then. They wanted to know, how do you make the daily digest?
So it depends how you're putting content out to the social media networks. I think that probably the best thing to do is to have a process that whoever's posting to your social media has a page that they also set on your website that they update as they change it. And then at the end of the day or the end of the week or something like that, someone actually goes through and grabs all that information and puts it in a daily digest. So what we mean by a daily digest is like an email. So, you know, if you've got a newsletter, something like that, but it's probably going to have to be manually created. Does that actually answer the question?
I have to wait for a reply on that.
Well, just while we're waiting for a reply, we've got the statistic. It's listed at www.dol.gov/ODEP. I'll get Eliza to put that into the main room so people can access it. But yes, as I said, I thought that was a very low percentage.
The other question that came in is, do you know if there are CAPTCHA services that are accessible?
No, there are no CAPTCHA services that are accessible. There is, I know Google has come out recently with this no CAPTCHA option, but when it does fall back to a CAPTCHA, which it often does with a screen-ready user, it's not accessible. I've written two articles on CAPTCHA. You can access them from the articles page on our website. One is called CAPTCHA Inaccessible to Everyone on SitePoint, and the other is something like How Do You Make an Accessible CAPTCHA, and it's that you can't. There are alternatives to CAPTCHAs that we can recommend. One of them is the human test question. So things like, is fire hot or cold? And you provide a checkbox for yes and a checkbox for no, and then the form only gets submitted if they've selected the right checkbox. You can also have something like, is grass green or blue? You know, is the sky blue or purple? That kind of thing. You can also have very easy math questions, like please enter what 2 + 2 =. You can also do things on the server, so this is something that your technical people could do, where often if a bot is submitting a form over and over again, they'll submit it without any real time difference, so they'll submit form 1 immediately, 0.2 seconds later they'll submit the same form again, 0.2 seconds later they'll submit the same form again. So one of the things that your technical guys can do is they can determine when the person opens the page and when they submit the form. And, you know, if it's a 5-option form, then you know that's got to be at least 10 seconds. So if it's less than 10 seconds between when someone opens the page and when someone submits the form, then it won't accept the form. So, yeah, those are the kind of things that we offer. There's another one which we call a honeypot field, which is where you have a hidden field that's not visible to people, and you actually say, please leave this field blank. You might need to make sure that that's the label, so that gets read by screen readers. And one of the things that robots do is they fill out every single field. So you then, therefore, in the technical side, if you receive a form with that field filled out, then you don't accept that form.
Wanda, are there any questions from our telephone participants?
There are no questions in the queue.
That is all the questions I see in our chat room, Gian and Eliza. If you do have any more questions, now would be the time. We have plenty of time left over for any further questions, anything you need clarified, any contact information you would like, etc.
Also, yeah, if you have any questions on accessibility, feel free to ask. Yeah, it doesn't have to be about social media.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that's star one if you have a question.
Yeah, this is Eliza. I wanted to just mention that we have a little bit of a Twitter conversation going on here. Thanks so much for our Twitter followers for suggesting the hashtag SOMEA11Y. So that's SOMEA11Y. Nice job on the camel case there. So, yeah, please do feel free to contact us via Twitter or these other contact methods and join in the conversation.
I do actually have some other questions from the chat that came in electronically, actually, I should say. I apologize. Bear with me here. Somebody did want to know about the accessibility of LinkedIn for job seekers and what you felt about the accessibility, again, of that particular website.
Yes, I think that next time I will include LinkedIn. The thing is, these. I know someone earlier asked if I had contacted people about their social media accessibility, and contacted these organisations. One of the reasons why I haven't is because they actually do have accessibility people working for them, and you know these people are active in the industry. You know, they obviously know a lot about accessibility, and I don't know whether it's a case of no, they don't get traction within the organisation to make the changes that they need. But yeah, I sort of feel like, you know, me contacting them and saying, "Hey, your system's not accessible," is you know, it's kind of like they must know that already. And it's just taking that when it comes to LinkedIn. I do know the LinkedIn accessibility manager, who's absolutely brilliant, and I have talked to him about some of the accessibility issues with LinkedIn. And in terms of job seekers, LinkedIn, I haven't done a lot of work on looking at the accessibility of it, but from my mobile and accessibility presentation, I do use some examples, and their colour contrast is incredibly problematic. You know, there's a lot of grey text on a dark grey background and things like that. They, you know, rely on placeholder, you know, text for search and things along those lines. But other than that, I haven't done a lot of research on LinkedIn. But when I write this article, I'll make sure that I include LinkedIn as one of the examples, so that it's useful. So look out for that article, and hopefully that will answer your question there.
Wanda, do we have any participants on the phone that have questions?
There are no questions in the queue.
I do have a couple more to ask our presenters. Can videos be captioned on different social media sites?
So, no, really the only thing that will allow you to caption videos is YouTube.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
So, no, unfortunately the only way to caption a video at the moment, well, is YouTube in the social media site.
Okay.
You can burn the captions into the video so that, you know, they'll show up wherever you show the video.
Okay. A couple more questions for you here. Are there any default settings in any of the social media apps or programs that would require accessibility and, for example, would require text description when posting a photo, per se?
No, there is nothing like that at all.
Okay. And as technology continues to evolve, as you talked about somewhat today, can persons with disabilities provide input to ensure new technologies and apps and or programs are accessible to persons with disabilities?
So there's not a formal way of doing something like that, but certainly in the US things are getting much, much better. In terms of accessibility in the US, government websites and things like that have to follow Section 508, but the Department of Justice is very actively suing organizations for not meeting web content accessibility guidelines version 2. So they're not really even referring to Section 508 anymore. So I would say probably the best thing to do if you want to, if you're a person with a disability who has a problem with a social media networking site, I would contact those sites directly and say, this is the problem that I'm having. But I would also consider looking at organisations that support people with your specific disability and going to them and saying, look, I can't use Facebook and I'm vision impaired. So they might have, well, I'm sure they would have received many complaints like that, and they can perhaps contact those social media networks on your behalf. Testing with people with disabilities is incredibly important, and is something that, I think people should do more of, but, there's no official official system in place or something like that.
Okay. And one last question in the chat room. If businesses and government agencies are using social media to promote programs and activities, should they have internal policies regarding accessibility for staff posting the information?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to be an organisation that's going to post stuff, you need to make sure that you should be aware now that social media is not accessible, so you need to have a policy and a process in place to say, this is the way you do it, this is the alternative that's going to be on our website, these are the daily digests that we're going to send.
Okay.
And it's important to know that you don't need to just worry about people with disabilities out in the community, but also disabilities in your own staff. And so that's, that can affect you, say, for example, uploading a video to YouTube. If you give that task to someone who's vision impaired, they're not going to be able to do that task. So that's important to remember as well.
Okay, and to follow up with that, can you give some examples of best practices?
Best practices in policies.
Mm-hmm.
Organisations don't necessarily make these things obvious. So it would just basically be, it would be the steps that I specified in this presentation. I mean, we follow those steps. We don't have a Facebook site, but we have a Twitter handle, and we have a LinkedIn LinkedIn company, and I'm on LinkedIn and things like that. But yes, no, I can't give any high profile examples.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Tawanda one last time. And are there any questions in the queue for us from the telephone?
There are no questions in the queue.
And I'm not seeing anything else in the chat room. So is there anything, Deanna and Eliza, you would like to say before we close?
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Hold on just a second. I guess that's another. Bear with us just a second. We do have some more questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
Tawanda, can you please unmute Peter Bird?
Sure. One moment. His line is open.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Sorry about that. It's going on. But we had a question submitted prior to the session, and you had touched on this during your presentation about apps being frequently updated, websites being updated. So just your thoughts on that issue from both the perspective of designers and persons with disabilities who maybe using older versions of their assistive technology for a variety of reasons, but, you know, finances, resources being one of those. So, you know, what are your thoughts when, you know, keeping up with technology when you may not have the resources in terms of keeping updated with your assistive technology?
Yeah, that's a really big issue because, I mean, when we tested these, we tested with the latest versions of everything. So, you know, if they're not fully accessible with the latest versions of the screen readers, they're definitely not going to be fully accessible with, you know, the older version of the screen readers. I think it's an ongoing problem with websites. You know, with everything that these things are expensive and are, you know, hard to get your hands on. In terms of screen readers, there's a great free version of a screen reader called NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access, and it's quite popular. I think it's maybe just after JAWS in terms of popularity, but I'd have to check that with the WebAid screen reader survey. But that's also something to look at in terms of screen readers is WebAIM completes a survey of screen reader use every year, so you can have a look at them in terms of what's happening. I think perhaps this will be less of an issue in the next few years as, you know, even if you've got an old iPhone, like an iPhone, you know, 4 or something like that, you can still run the latest iOS version and then hopefully, you know, run the latest version of Safari and, you know, VoiceOver and things like that. So maybe with, you know, mobiles as, you know, becoming more and more popular, this will be less of an issue. But, yeah, it's definitely a problem.
Yeah, just as a follow-up from a personal perspective, I'm a VoiceOver user myself. And have you gotten feedback? I've noticed that the accessibility to you know, some of the apps that I use was impacted by the latest updates to the operating system, especially 9.2. What feedback or thoughts have you gotten on that?
Yeah. So this is yeah, you're right, and it brings its own problems. We see that a lot with AusPlayer, which I can you know, ask for. It's a product. It's a web video player, and every time there's a operating system update, you know, we have to test all over again because, you know, it does crazy things. So, you know, one iOS update and the captions would show up twice. So, yeah, but it does happen. And also we found with we do mobile accessibility testing, and we found in the latest version of iOS it just didn't support external keyboards with websites. The external keyboard would work just fine with your mobile apps, but as soon as you went to a website, wouldn't work at all. So, yeah, it's I think that it's got to do with the fact that, you know, mobile is kind of where web was, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and people aren't looking at these things when they're releasing these updates. And I remember having to test back in, you know, 99 with, you know, Windows 98 and, or probably early 2000s, Windows 98 and Windows XP and Windows CE and Windows ME and et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of the same now with mobile, where you have to test with a whole range of different mobiles, and then you have to test with a whole range of different operating systems, and then, you know, different browsers as well, and then on top of that, different screen readers. So, you know, it is a mess at the moment, and I can just hope that it gets better. But yeah, it does happen. It really does happen a lot, unfortunately.
And the when you were talking about the, again, this is just a follow up from my own curiosity. When you were talking about VoiceOver, were you talking about accessing you know, Facebook and YouTube through Safari or through the apps for those social media, or were you talking about both?
Yeah, so we were talking about the apps. Sorry, I didn't say that in the presentation, but yeah,
we were talking
about the apps.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then have you tested, you know, using VoiceOver with Safari as well, or that's
no, we haven't. We've got anecdotal evidence that from our screen reader users that the mobile websites are easier to use. But the other problem with mobile websites just generally is that often they're a cut-down version of the desktop system or they're a cut-down version of the mobile app. So you don't actually get access to all the information that you know, you should be able to get access to. And as a screen reader user, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, what the screen looks like because you can't see it. You need to be able to actually access all the content. So if you access it, that's the biggest problem with mobile websites, if you don't know if you're getting all the information that you would get if you accessed it through a desktop.
And does Apple, in, you know, that they have a, you know, a certain format in which apps must be developed to be used on their devices, does that assist in any way in driving developers to incorporating accessibility?
Yeah, absolutely. The Apple requirements mean that, you know, out of the box, many of the mobile apps are not fully accessible, but they have, you know, some basic accessibility, especially to VoiceOver. It's not 100%, but I don't think it can be 100% unless you actually, you know, engage an accessibility firm to test, you know, every single app before it went out. But, yeah, their requirements are much more stringent than, you know, any of the other kind of mobile systems out there. And you can see that in the apps. You can see that they're much more accessible than things like Android apps and things like that because they are actually requiring those accessibility, you know, requirements.
And have you done any testing in the Android environment?
Very, very little. Well, actually, we've done a lot of mobile website testing in the Android environment. Android is it's a bit of a mess because, you know, you can, with iOS at least, you've got discrete versions, you've got, you know, discrete products. With Android, there's, you know, thousands and thousands of products out there. And then there's all these different versions and whether people have updated them or not, you know, you can't tell. And so we test with, you know, the latest three versions of Samsung phone, the latest two versions of Samsung tablets. But, you know, depending on the client, we test with Chrome. Sometimes we test with the internet browser. And that will often give us a very, very different, you know, different results. Just those two different browsers. And then, yeah, we test with TalkBack. But, yes, just websites. We've done Android testing with.
Are you aware of any research that have been done or surveys that have been conducted or anecdotally for people with disabilities, what is being used in more widely, you know, Android-based phones or the iPhone?
Yeah, I believe that Apple devices are much more popular amongst people with disabilities than Android phones. There is a document written by Media Access Australia about social media accessibility. I think it was updated 2 years ago, which talks a little bit about the different mobiles. It also talks a little bit about, you know, how as a person with a disability you would actually get onto these social networks. As I said, it's a couple of years old, so it might not be applicable anymore, but that's certainly somewhere to look.
Excellent. And just one last one for me that we got in advance. On, you talked about accessibility of Twitter being pretty good. Can when people tweet out photos, can they be tagged through Twitter?
No, once again. You'd need to, what I do is I tweet out the text with the image, and at the end of the text I say alt follows, and then I immediately immediately tweet out alternative as just a tweet. So because there's no way to actually add that, add an alt attribute to the actual image, unfortunately.
And then how do you handle videos, or do you tweet videos?
Well, we don't tweet videos. I don't think we have tweeted videos, but if we did, we'd click the video, would say alternative, would probably link to a web page that, you know, so alternative details, you know, can be viewed on this particular web page. And on that web page, we'd have the video in AusPlayer, in our accessible video player. We'd have the transcript. We'd make sure the video is captioned, that it had an audio description version. I think that's what we would do. And we will be posting videos at some point. But, of course, that's videos that we can control. Other people's videos, I think the only thing, you know, that you can do if you're going to be tweeting out inaccessible videos is actually tell the user that it's not accessible.
Okay, I just wanted to check Tawanda one last time if there's anybody on the phone that has questions.
There are no questions in the queue.
Thank you, and we do not have any other chat questions. I would like to remind everybody that we do have our next session on November 17th, and it's going to be about new customer service and accessible meetings resources. So please put that on your calendars. Thank you so much again, Jan and Eliza, for joining us today. It was a great presentation, and also taking your time from the time difference. We appreciate that so much. I learned a lot, and we really do appreciate you being available. And again, November 17th is our next session. Everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. You may now disconnect. Presenters, please stand by.